Down to brass tacks.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
How are you today, sir?
I'm well, and you?
I am calling you. Probably you can check, but I heard you dealing with the damage to the roadway in Barbados. But if I remember well, there's a bit of legislation that was passed, I think, back in either 2001 or 2002, restoration, that all utilities companies, whether it be natural gas, whether it be waterworks, even whoever they are that have damaged the roads in Barbados in terms of digging up to install or to remove, there is a law, a restoration law, that if they dig up, it has to be done back, it has to be done within a certain amount of time. And I know you well. I know you're going to check that. You're going to check that because I don't see how you could just pave. Take, for example, I'll give you an idea. Those people who live in communities that want to get natural gas, obviously you have to put in, you have to make sure that the road is surface first. It's not surface because if natural gas has to come in after, then it will be a long time for those people to get the natural gas because the road cannot be dug up. But I remember well that I debated that Restoration Act, and you can check it out, where all utilities, government-owned and private-owned, are responsible for restoration and replacing the damage done to the road.
Question is, to what extent has it been followed and policed and implemented?
In the early days, sir, I remember that I saw it happening. There was because I think it is being policed by Ministry of Public Works. I saw it happening. I saw roads being dug up. Then the next day you pass back, you saw it being resurfaced. But for somewhere along the line, we don't police our laws in Barbados, and I've seen it now rampant. I've seen where somewhere along the lines that the hole that the leaf is getting deeper and deeper and deeper and creates more damage to the vehicle on the road. So I would love somebody from MTW or somebody in authority to really confirm that there is an act of parliament dealing with the restoration of roads in Barbados that are damaged by utility companies.
I'm looking here to see if I find the legislation, but I haven't seen it yet. But I'll look for it.
Yeah.
You know, but seriously, it is something that we, given the kind of concerns that were expressed about the condition of our roads up until recently, and the amount of money that Barbadians are paying to have these roads repaired, it is grossly unacceptable to see something like what obtains on Green Hill right now. And what has been drawn to our attention by somebody else here about Whitehall. No, this is not, this should not go unnoticed. And there is no doubt whatsoever that road has to be repaired because it is now at the point where it is just getting deeper and deeper. The hole is getting deeper.
I know you're also aware, sir, that the new policy in terms of roadworks as for utilities, that both sides of the road, one time you had gas going on one side or you might have water going on the other side, and then you had a situation where I might want to run water and I have to cross the road. Within recent times, there is a new understanding that the utilities will run underground, so both gas, water, and in some areas electricity is on the ground. So this was all done at the time when it was actually looking at putting utilities on the ground and maintaining that if somebody live on the right hand side and they want natural gas, then obviously that restoration work would not be any big set of work because it would be on the same side that the natural gas is running.
Here's the piece though. I found it. It's the Road Traffic Act, Chapter 295. It says here in the section that where by reason of any offense against this act, any damage is caused to a road, the authority responsible for the repair of such road may cause that damage to be made good and may, before or after the damage is made good, recover the estimated or actual cost, as the case may be, of the damage from the owner of the vehicle. But that's a different matter. This is if the vehicle damages the road. I don't see, and you may have to help me in finding that particular piece of the legislation, which speaks about the utility causing damage to the road and then having a responsibility to repair it, you know?
I never knew that the Restoration Act was so important. Take, for example, government removing a guard wall in a community or making adjustments to a roadway in a community. Take, for example, up St. Patrick's. St. Patrick's was a wide understanding of that, and also down Black Rock, that whatever you remove, it must be restored. You cannot go on and leave it. So my notice goes back to tell me that the Restoration Act in Barbados, in terms of government replacing and moving and have to put back by a certain time, is extremely important. But I don't think it is police, Mr. Ellis. I think that it is a carefree situation. And, for example, if you look at St. Patrick's, those of us who have driven through St. Patrick's to realize that when that road was repaired up there, there was a demand for fencing, and almost every house in that area, community in that area, was restored. Down Black Rock, I remember well, down Black Rock, we had a situation when that road was being repaired as well. That if you look, you will see there's seven new walls, take the Nazarene Church there in Black Rock.
Mm-hmm.
That was one that a demand had to be done. So I'd be grateful to check it out for you, but you'd also follow up to prove that there is a law on the restoration.
All right, sir. This person says that the information that he gave you about the Barbadian living abroad, that person is in Boston, and they're saying that the situation there, it is bad, and they're saying that it is going to get worse before it gets better. All schools are closed. And they say that when I say it is bad, I mean from a financial standpoint. I hope everything stays okay there, meaning here in Barbados, because they say they know what can and will happen. Okay? And then there's this Bajan also listening from North Dakota. There's been one case of COVID reported there. This person says that they went into the office this morning, but they were sent back home to work from home. And a lot of the supermarket shelves are empty. But he and his wife have a few things to last for at least a couple of weeks. So that kind of feedback from you, Barbadians living abroad, is also interesting for our listeners here in Barbados. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. Now, I've been looking at something here in Trinidad. A couple of stories across the region coming out of this COVID matter that you need to watch. In Jamaica, taxi drivers have been leaving nurses at the bus stop and stuff like that. They're not taking them from point to point because they fear that the nurses are bringing the COVID with them. So if you see how people can react, the fear that these things can generate, can have these types of consequences. In the case of Trinidad, consideration is being given by the chief personnel officer to introduce what they are calling pandemic leave as a new classification of paid leave in the light of the COVID-19 on business operations. This announcement was made at a conference hosted by the Labour Minister on Sunday. It is explained that this type of leave is different from sick leave and is meant to accommodate leave for employees who do not have sick leave eligibility as part of the agreed terms of their employment. So these people who are on freelance contracts and that sort of thing, this is what this particular piece of pandemic leave is supposed to address. The leave applies to workers classified as short-term employees and temporary workers who only have sick leave but no provision for extended sick leave. It was further explained that this leave will assist parents who are unable to report for work because there is no one to supervise their children while schools are closed for the week. It is explained that it is not sick leave, it's not extension of sick leave, it's not a leave of absence. Pandemic leave will be applied in this current circumstance for all categories of workers who will not be coming to work because they have to take care of their children. That's in Trinidad. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Top of the day to you.
Yes, sir.
Just on a side, and I don't want to delve into this too deeply, but I was just messaged not long ago that a mutual friend of ours is not too well. And I'm sorry to hear about that. Anyway, let me just mention why I called. I heard the conversation between you and Mark as it relates to the repair of the roadway.
Yes.
Now, when I worked in government, worked with the Ministry of Transport and Works, and there was a time when if a utility company dug up the road, that utility company digging the road was responsible for its repair. But for some reason, it seemed to have come to an end and apparently no longer applies. Now, I don't know if there was legislation that mandated it or not, but that it was the position for that digging up company to repair was a fact of life. Now, there is no reason, in my view, why something like this should not happen, whether by legislation or otherwise, because it is not fair to have a road newly constructed, for example, and then a utility company doing its work messes up the road and just leaves it. There's a road not far from where I live where that is the case. And the NPC people just dug up a road to put a meter by a house, newly constructed, and the road is left in a state. It really needs somebody looking into this to get the matter rectified as a matter of some urgency. I agree with you.
Yeah. There is a bit of information, quite a bit of information is coming in here. Somebody says here, I thought the government was screening persons. Why are people allowed to travel from affected, I believe they mean infected areas, but are not forced to quarantine? Someone went to New York Friday and reported to work this morning. They want to know what is going on. When people came from China, they were asked to self-quarantine. Why was this man allowed to turn up for work? What madness. Okay, so these are the kinds of concerns that people have. And, you know, we as media practitioners can't answer all of these questions. And that's why there needs to be that kind of mechanism where if people have that kind of issue, then somebody within the government team can explain what the thinking is or whether the person went to work when they should not have gone to work. Because, you know, people are worried that if you're coming out coming out of an infected area, then there is a possibility that you could be incubating the coronavirus. And you should, at a minimum, be into a self-quarantine situation for a couple of days.
There is another matter here, David, if I may, with this social distancing, where I believe that if we were up to it in the computer world, some people would be able to do their work from home. For example, I have a son who is at BCC right now, and if for whatever reason they felt they didn't want to continue classes, I see no reason why he could not do his work from home and submit it by computer.
I may be accused of hysteria and panic, in a sense, but I really believe that these are the measures that we should put in place now. I think that is part of being prepared and trying to put people in a state of readiness and start the practice of doing things in a particular way. Do not wait until it actually hits you. That's how I feel. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'll say this, huh? If the people who call the shots do not do what we believe they're supposed to do, we as individuals will do it ourselves, you know, because at the end of the day, you are to look after your own best interests. And that's what you're supposed to do. So, I mean, if it is obvious that we are at a stage where you've got to sensitize and get people to be far more cautious, I've noticed that a lot of people stop shaking hands. Quite a lot of people have stopped doing that, which means they're taking that aspect of it seriously. What else? This is Down to Brass Tacks.
So shut down schools for this week. President of Guyana, David Granger, has announced a total recount of the votes from the March 2nd regional and general elections, and he is embracing the CARICOM initiative, which had initially agreed to an independent high-level team to supervise the recount of ballots in all 10 regions. President Granger addressed the nation last evening.
I propose that the CARICOM initiative should operate within the legal framework of the Constitution of Guyana and respect the role of the Elections Commission and the rulings of the Supreme Court. It will not act independently. I urged also that the Commission be allowed to craft the terms of reference governing the relationship between the CARICOM Initiative and the Elections Commission. The organizational structure, which should embody supervisory and technical elements, should be determined by the Elections Commission. The government of Guyana looks forward to a total national recount being completed as soon as possible.
And at a news conference last Saturday, the General Secretary of the People's Progressive Party, Bharat Jagdeo, called the post-election situation a crisis created by a group of people with agendas. However, he's hailing the proposed total recount of the votes.
And it is a crisis that was man-made by a small group of people that we believe that are hell-bent on declaring fictitious results, false results, and then swearing in a president on the basis of those fraudulent results. You've seen so many shenanigans along the way in an attempt to prevent proper verification of the results using police tactics as well as not obeying the orders of the court.
Mayor Motley has said the CARICOM team will be headed by former Dominica Attorney General and Foreign Affairs Minister Francine Baron. And that's your OCM Regional News. Have a good afternoon.
Tracking the latest is brought to you with the compliments of the Barbados Light and Power, electricity, powering our nation's progress since 1911. Say good afternoon to Stetson Babb.
Well, good afternoon to you. Among the stories we are tracking at this hour, Sanitation Service Authority workers back on the job after staging a work stoppage this morning over COVID-19 and general health and safety concerns. The Environment Minister, Trevor Prescott, who spoke to the workers this morning, has promised them their concerns, including the need for a medical plan, are being addressed. The Minister of Elder Affairs says in Parliament that protocols will be put in place at senior citizens' homes to protect the elderly, seen as particularly vulnerable at this point in time. Key economists here in Barbados speak about the economic fallout for Barbados from the coronavirus situation. It's expected to hit the entire global economy, Barbados included. Meantime, Prime Minister Motley to address the nation tonight, providing a COVID-19 update. And the national recounting of ballots in the Guyana general elections expected to begin in about another half an hour or so. Those stories and more coming up in the lunchtime edition of the latest from Starcom Network News. Stetson Babb in the Starcom Network News Center.
Tracking the latest was brought to you in association with Barbados Light and Power, electricity, powering our nation's progress since 1911.
The latest health updates on health-related events and developments.
Containing the coronavirus, what can we learn from others in the world?
Hong Kong and Taiwan have only seen a handful of deaths between them so far. And in Singapore, no one has died out of 200 cases in a population of nearly 6 million.
Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong, Professor Ben Cowling, on what these countries have done.
The first step is really critical, is testing as many people as possible so you can find even mild cases in the community, and then isolating them and any of their close contacts putting into quarantine so that even if there was one generation of spread, there won't be any further generations of spread.
He adds that one advantage the three countries have had over Europe and the United States is that SARS caused them to boost their lab testing facilities over the years.
That's right. So the hospitals now have really good laboratories so that they can scale up very quickly to do testing even of mild cases that come to the accident and emergency departments. And then also we have the facilities to isolate people outside the home. We don't need to send the mild cases back to their homes where they can infect their family members. And we also have facilities for quarantine, special designated camps or hotels or public housing buildings that are not yet occupied where people can be quarantined. And that stops further spread into the community.
That's The Latest Health, a production of the Starcom Network.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Now, we got some responses here from people who are making their own suggestions as to how they believe Barbados should be dealing with the coronavirus in the current circumstances. This person says, are we waiting for the first coronavirus case before we take the necessary precautions when it comes to large gatherings? Why have we not suspended the schools as yet? Or are we simply now playing the waiting game? Another person says while we don't want to panic, we must be proactive and limit personal contact, except for 4 years at primary and those taking CSEC and CAPE. They should be barred from school. All sporting events should be suspended. We cannot wait until a case is confirmed here. And maybe that may be too late, as that person may have, in the meantime, been engaging in activities. We are rightfully thinking about the economics of this situation, but that's the front end. What about the back end? If we get people sick en masse and they can't work to provide services and support families, not to mention the cost of the state providing care. On this question, which was raised of somebody going to New York and coming back and going to work, one view expressed here is that the company itself, the HR in a company, should have a policy in relation to that. And it shouldn't be left for the government to be mandating what happens in those circumstances. There are some views that suggest that we should treat with this issue as if we already had the virus here, rather than waiting until there is an official confirmation. And this is particularly relevant to a host of activities that we are indulging in right now, including all sorts of meetings as well. There are some people who are putting a strong emphasis on meeting online rather than in person because they're taking it seriously. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon. It's 9 minutes afternoon.
Yes, sorry about that. Good afternoon.
Yeah.
Mr. Ellis, when we have people contractors building our homes for us privately, we often inspect the work ourselves and we look forward to a certain standard and quality. I wonder what happens when the government do contracts, who is responsible for ensuring that the government obtains quality, value for money and things like that. And if you could look at one type of work, there would be others, but let us look at road construction. And I think of this because you were discussing roads this morning with Mark Williams and so. who ensures that roads are built to the, or resurfaced to the required standards and so? Because sometimes...
Well, that certainly would be the role of the Ministry of Transport and Works.
Oh, well, you know, sometimes the roads are rushed because people are complaining.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know the roads are rushed because people are complaining. I know that people have raised concerns about the standard of roadworks in Barbados.
Yeah.
But it has always been emphasized that there are those charged with the responsibility of supervising that kind of activity. That's what they're supposed to do. So you shouldn't really have an environment in which a road is rushed for that purpose, because we all know the consequences of rushing things. It means in next to no time, it lick up, mash up, and break up.
Right. All right. Now, I passed the Calama Rock Road, the newly resurfaced one, and this is where the fish cake guy used to be talking with Peter Wickerman about that road going on Calama Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I am finding a problem in that area, as I find in other areas as well, and that is that these manhole covers are never replaced to the correct level. So you're dropping in and out. But the thing is, I know that once the road is newly resurfaced, everybody thinks it is splendid, but they're not looking at the details of the road.
Well, people are paid to do that. I mean, you don't want to waste the slender resources that you have. And I can't speak about that particular road and the standard to which it has been resurfaced. But in all of this, money is scarce. And you don't want to spend that money in an unwise or foolish manner.
But no, what I'm saying is that you're paid to do the road. If you dig up the road, then you have to put it back down properly, because they scrape it first. And then when you put your tar, whatever it is, on the road, you have to bring it back down to the level of the manhole covers, or you have to raise the covers. That is not an additional expense. That's supposed to be within the cost of doing the road. That's not a separate job. The people who do the road is responsible for bringing all of these manholes to the level of the road. And it is not happening. So I'm wondering if the government is here is being shortchanged, or if nobody is inspecting the road. That's why I ask you if somebody is responsible for checking these things.
Yes, somebody is responsible for checking.
But they don't seem to be doing the work,
right?
Because the road is not done properly.
Okay.
Right? The road is not done properly. Now, I just want to raise one other thing. As you were talking about house construction some weeks ago, and how people are getting ripped off. Now, are issues that arise in construction. One of the issues that I had after completing my house was a strange thing. I didn't even think it would happen. The guy that was responsible for my house after the construction, he said to me that I supposed to give him some kind of money for NIS jewels or something like that. And it was a little shock to me, because I never heard of anything like that. I don't know if you were familiar with anything, so?
No, I am unaware. Because in many instances, well, these people are what you call freelancers, we call them.
That's what I think.
You gave him the money?
I gave it because in the end it turned out to be a small amount, and I was also satisfied with the construction of the house. So,
all right then.
So I didn't have a complaint. But he told me this is the normal thing. I was so surprised to hear that.
Well, what he's essentially doing, I mean, he has to protect himself. But
yeah.
What is unfortunate about that kind of process is that ideally you should be told that this is part of the agreement up front.
Yes.
You see, he shouldn't do the work, and after you have paid him, then say, but you have extra money for me for this.
Right. But that's what I told him too. I told him, if you had told me up front, I'd be prepared for it. But he told me after the fact. And then he did a house for somebody else in the area too, and then he and them get rid because they didn't want to pay him. I don't think they did it. No, but
because there are some people who are doing business like that in the country. And you and I, when we engage people to do work, we've got to move to a position where it is documented and you get them to sign the piece of paper to say that this is what the agreement is.
Yes, I think we got to move to that. But that was not the way we did it at the time. But
yeah, but you will do it so now, though.
Yeah, I will do it so now for sure.
Yeah, because this is part of what has crept into the country over time. You have a situation where at a variety of levels, people feel that they can trick you.
Right. The only other thing I had, though, was that when it came to, he was moving between job work and day work, depending on how it was convenient. And when it came to plastering, he said, well, that's job work. And he charged by the square yard or square feet. But when it comes to the top of the house, where there's an angle, he's still measuring length by width and calculating a rectangle when actually part of it is a triangle. So he tells me that the contractors, what they do, they charge for the whole area, even though it does not exist. So that is the methodology that they use. So a lot of strange things going on in construction at the time. Yeah. Anyhow, thanks for listening.
Okay. Yeah. Down to brass tacks. Hello. We're here. Are you there?
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm okay.
I was listening to your discussion about road repairs, etc.
Yes.
Remember, I had seriously objected to that work, federal repair work going out to private contractors. As I always
so which work going out? Do you mean the road works?
The road repairs. I'm not talking about the construction of the road.
The repairs.
I've been a service company, do work on the road, I have to pay because by right, they should be paying NCW for them. And I felt that saying that NCW had all the depots across Barbados, that the best agency to do that work would have been NCW, instead of contractors being allowed to afford the work until they found it convenient to do because of the location of the work.
So as it stands right now, if the Barbados Water Authority dug up the area that I talked about in Codrington in Green Hill.
Right.
This work is to be done. Is to be done by a private. I don't like your phone line sounds terrible. Your phone line sounds bad. Excuse me. It's so bad that you can't even hear me. Mr. Kelman, you have a very bad line. This line is terrible. And you need to. It needs to be improved if we are to continue the conversation. But can you do that for us? Mr. Kelmer, call me back. We can't hear you well enough at all. Not at all. The consequences of the coronavirus being felt quite a lot. I see here is a piece that says that. United Airlines President Scott Kirby laid out a doom and gloom scenario in a presentation to investors on Tuesday about the airline's aggressive playbook to cope with the coronavirus crisis. He said he hoped the dire predictions of projected revenue declines of 70% in April and May, which would be worse than 9/11, didn't come true. And in a matter of days, they did. And the airline is throwing out that playbook and making even deeper cuts. In a memo to employees late Sunday, Kirby and United CEO Oscar Munoz said the airline will cut flights by 50% in April and May, and extend cuts into the peak summer travel season. Even with a severely reduced number of flights, the airline said it still expects planes to be less than a third full. And of course, you know what is driving that. people are afraid. They do not, I mean, you only travel if absolutely necessary. Right here in this Caribbean community, you have a situation where people are being discouraged. CEOs and senior people in companies and the average people who are working in companies are being asked to stay away from traveling if they can do so, you know. And it's a difficult period, but as I said, part of what is going to happen is going to force us to use technology to a greater extent. Now, here's one that is even more direct to directly related to us. Virgin Atlantic will be asked, the staff of Virgin Atlantic are being asked to take 8 weeks of unpaid leave over the next 3 months to help this airline cope during the coronavirus pandemic. The airline is one of many to have brought in drastic measures to cope with a fall in passenger demand due to global travel restrictions and the reluctance to travel due to the disease. Bosses said the costs would be spread over 6 months' salary to drastically reduce costs without job losses. Also on Monday, Virgin Atlantic to reduce flights by 80% by March 26, and the London Heathrow to Newark route to be axed immediately. TUI cancels the vast majority of its holidays. EasyJet warns most of its fleet could be grounded, saying it will continue to operate rescue flights for short periods where we can, to repatriate passengers, but more cuts are expected. The EasyJet chief executive said that European aviation faces a precarious future, and it is clear that coordinated government backing will be required to ensure the industry survives. Here's another development. Ryanair expects the majority of its European fleet to be grounded over the next 7 to 10 days. In countries where they are not grounded, growing restrictions could make flying impractical, if not impossible, says the airline. A British Airways owner, IAG, says travel restrictions are having a significant and increasingly negative impact on demand on almost all of its routes. IAG to reduce capacity by 75% in April and May compared to the same period last year. And IAG staff to be offered voluntary leave options, recruitment to be frozen, and working hours reduced. Now, all of this has implications for a country like Barbados. Look and see what has already happened with respect to the cruise industry. So if this happening on the one hand in the cruise industry, people have already reduced their flying across the board in the world. One big question is, what is all of this going to do to LIAT? What is it going to do to intra-regional trade, especially in a situation where Barbados has a trade surplus with the OECS? This is a very serious issue, and we want to hear your own views on what is practical and what is impossible. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
Not too bad. I would like to talk this morning about the way how some of the business people, or without people, your business can't function, right?
Yes. That's correct. Right.
So I would like that a lot of these business people, because you see what's going on right now, but I want us people get sick on their jobs and can't work at home from work. If a lot of these business people would pitch in and help, like give them some sort of financing, like when they're home sick, which in, I doubt very much that a lot of them would do to, because a lot of them work, a lot of the poor people out there working for a lot of these business people, they don't want getting a proper raise to pay. Everybody sitting down and watching their money, you know? And before people working for you, your business can't flourish. And because they hear a lot of these private sectors and business people could do a lot more than what they are doing for the employees, you know. And a lot of them just don't see the goodness that the employers could be doing for them. You see? So people got to realize that before people in your business cannot function. I learned to treat people more with, what should I call it? Learn to treat people more genuine. What is your comments about that?
I really cannot sit here and defend scenarios where business people and managers, those who lead our companies, completely forget the need for that sensitivity, the way that people are treated. I mean, if people feel as though they are not well respected and well treated, then it is reflected in the way they look after your company. You know, because, you know, a guy will realize that something is wrong and will take the initiative to correct it, because that person feels as though there is something in it for them at the end of the day, even if it is nothing more than the reward of respect for the initiative which has been taken. Yeah. It takes all sorts to make the world go wrong, you know. And there are a lot of people in positions of responsibility who have a view that when you are in leadership demands that you crack a whip. Leadership demands that you say, well, it has to be done my way or no way at all. And especially if the person owns the company, you could get from them an attitude that says, you know, this is my company. I started it from scratch. It is not about your opinion, and it is not about consensus. I'm the leader here, and because I'm the leader, I call the shots, and you do as I demand of you. Now, you have to determine which style is going to work for you. Some people believe that particular style works. Others adopt more of a consensus style. The question of job satisfaction and the satisfaction within companies is something that perhaps needs to be assessed in those terms. But we need to expand on that a little later when we come back after the news in this edition of Down to Brass Tacks.